With the beginning of the 20th century, the present century, we may say that a new phase begins. This is the phase, this is the period within which English people, that is to say people born and educated in this country, begin adopting and following Buddhism as their own personal religion, their own way of life. So Buddhism is no longer, in this phase, in this period, just an object of academic study, intellectual interest, but it becomes a really living religion, followed, practiced, studied by people in this country. Now, the first Buddhist organization was started quite a long time ago, exactly 60 years ago, in 1906, and it was started by two stalwarts, one of whom is still alive, in fact, R.J. Jackson, and by J.R. Payne. So they started this first Buddhist organization in this country. In 1908, they returned to this country after spending 6 years in the East as a monk, Ananda Maitreya, born as Alan Bennett, of Scottish origin, who went out to the East, to Burma especially, in 1902, especially with the object of learning Buddhism there, or studying it more thoroughly, so as to be able to return and preach it in this country. Now, after his return, after he started his work here, in 1908, the first Buddhist magazine, a periodical called the Buddhist Review, was started. So these three, the organization, the monk, and the magazine, they carried on for 16 years, till 1923, when Ananda Maitreya died. Now it's rather remarkable that we can say, or we can even claim, that the English, as it were, converted themselves to Buddhism. Here's something practically unique, or perhaps even unique, in the history of Buddhism. When one studies the history of Buddhism, what one usually finds is that some monk missioner goes from, say, India to China, or from India to Tibet, or from China to Korea, or Korea to Japan, and introduces the religion, the teaching of the Buddha, to the indigenous inhabitants. But this isn't what happened in this particular case. In this particular case, it was English people themselves who took interest in Buddhism, studied it, and decided to go to the East, in the case of Ananda Maitreya, gain a further, a deeper knowledge, and then return to this country and disseminate it. So this is quite an important fact. Apart from its historical uniqueness, so far as I know, or practical historical uniqueness, it's important in as much as we may say it's characteristic of the whole course of development of English Buddhism. It has always been very independent, reliant on its own efforts, its own studies, and its own thought. This isn't perhaps surprising that it should be so, because, as I mentioned last week, over the last few hundred years in the East, Buddhism has not been in a very active condition. It's as though the most creative phases were a thing of the past. Very little life, very little energy, at least organizationally, were left in Buddhism there in the East. Now, after Ananda Maitreya's death in 1923, the gap was filled by a series, a very important series of 36 lectures by a disciple of R.J. Jackson called Francis Payne. So his lectures kept the movement going during that sort of interregnum. And then in 1924, Mr. Christmas Humphreys founded the Buddhist Lodge of the Theosophical Society, which in the next year, 1925, became the Buddhist Society as an independent organization. So the Buddhist Society is still the oldest living Buddhist organization, not only in this country, but even in the whole of the West. Now, during this same period, very important additions were made through the literature about Buddhism available in English. It's at this time that Dr. D.T. Suzuki started writing in English and publishing his writings in article and book form about Zen, which, as you know, has assumed a tremendous importance in the development of Buddhism, not only in this country, but in America, in the United States also. At the same time, Dr. Evans Wentz, who had studied in Sikkim, launched the Oxford Tibetan series, with translations of very important Tibetan texts, the Life of Milarepa, Tibetan Book of the Dead, Tibetan Yoga and Secret Doctrines, and so on. So these contributions of Dr. Suzuki and of Evans Wentz have very enormously enriched our knowledge of Buddhism, which hitherto have been confined mainly to the Theravada Pali Canon and to certain selected Mahayana sutras. Dr. Suzuki's writings in particular, we may say, marked a turning point, because they succeeded in penetrating into circles where Buddhism had been hitherto unknown. Philosophers, psychologists, students of comparative religion, many of them, some even famous like Jung and Fromm, devoted themselves to Dr. Suzuki's writings and apparently were very deeply influenced or at least impressed by them. During the war, of course, there was a sort of lull in Buddhist activities in this country, but immediately after the war, there was a very considerable expansion. The Buddhist society itself became much better known, and scores of new books on Buddhism were published by various publishing houses. In particular, one can refer to Mr. Christmas Humphreys's Pelican Buddhism, 300,000 copies of which has so far been sold. If one reflects upon it, that is quite an achievement. If one reflects that there are at least in this country 300,000 people who read a book, at least one book on Buddhism. And if one assumes, as is quite reasonable, that say two or three people have read many of these copies, well, it comes very near the 500,000 mark. Buddhism is beginning to make some little impression, it seems. On a much profounder level, there are Dr. Konz's translations from the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras, which belong, at least so far as publication is concerned, to the same period. The Perfection of Wisdom Sutras are perhaps the most important single group of sutras in the whole of Mahayana Buddhist canonical literature. There are about 36 of these sutras, some of them several volumes long, some just a page in length. And Dr. Konz has completed the enormous task of single-handedly translating all of them. Many have been published, others are available in typescript. In my opinion, this is one of the great translation pioneering works of Buddhist history, ranking with the work of Kumarajiva and Yuan Chuang. And very remarkable that one man should have been able to achieve so much, despite, even one might say, very little encouragement. Now in 1955, that's just 10 years ago, there was founded the English Sangha Trust and the English Sangha Association. And the idea behind these two bodies was mainly to send trainees to the East for ordination as monks and for study, and also to arrange for their support and to provide them with facilities for teaching after their return to this country. And with this, of course, we come down to the present day. So much for the past.